Today's program was brought to you by Blueprint, the original juice cleanse program to offer different levels of intensity depending on your needs and current diet. For more information, visit blueprint.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Zombies, bad parties, polyamory, and odes to Baltimore and ukuleles. Any subject can become a catchy and meaningful song in the hands of Brooklyn musician Mal Bloom. We'll talk to Mal and hear her play next on After the Jump. Hey, welcome to After the Jump. I'm your host, Grace Bonney, and today we're coming to you live from Roberto's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. You can listen to the show live every Thursday at 11 on heritageradionetwork.org or download the podcast on iTunes. For the next few weeks, I'm going to be introducing you to some talented and hardworking artists who are creating things outside of the design field we traditionally talk about here. When I first sat down to start this series, the very first person I put on my list to invite was musician Mal Bloom. I've been a fan of Mal's music for a while, and because music has always been my other great love outside of art, I wanted the chance to feature someone who understood both the challenges and triumphs of making a creative music goal work with a DIY mentality. Mal is not only a great example of someone making a creative goal come to life on her own, but she's also a seriously great songwriter. I am so excited to learn more about her today, and it's an honor to have her, so welcome, Mal.
Hi.
You're like, that's the most enthusiastic hello that's like an early rainy morning I've ever gotten.
That was a very exciting intro.
So thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
For people who aren't familiar with your music yet, let's start at the beginning. So where did you grow up and when did you write your first song?
Oh, I grew up in Rockland County, which is in New York. and if I consider it a suburb of New York City, but if you talk to anybody in New York City, they will tell you that it is upstate New York. And if you talk to anybody who lives in upstate New York, they will laugh at that. So, and I wrote my first song when I was 14, and it was a song about being a vegan. It was a comedy song. And it's called Vegan Song. So, because I was really good at titling songs.
Was your family supportive of your music?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't think that they thought that I was going to go on a career path towards it. But, you know, they were like, cool, take guitar lessons, you know, be well-rounded, great. But yeah. I think if they knew where I was
going
with
it. Enjoy this phase.
Yeah.
Here's a practice guitar. So you took lessons. Did you keep going for a while, or was that something that you kind of picked up and carried with on your own?
Well, actually, at first I taught myself, and then, like, a few years into it, I tried to take lessons, but, I wouldn't say I kept going with it. It really was a short-lived phase.
It's weird. I don't know any girls who took guitar lessons growing up that enjoyed them or kept going. I took them when I was 13 and I stopped because my teacher was like, you know, you're not going to do anything with this, right?
Whoa.
And I kept bringing in like awesome songs by Hole. And I was like, teach me how to play this song. And he was like, you're never going to be in a rock band. Like, girls don't front rock bands. And I was like, dude, I'm giving you a song fronted by a girl rock band.
A huge girl rock band. Hole. Oh my God.
I know, right?
One of my favorites.
Yeah.
I wish that there was a rock camp around to tell you otherwise at that point in time.
Exactly. I was going to say, I was like, well, there happens to be one. Talk about, I was going to ask you about this later, but let's talk about it. You taught at the Rock and Roll Camp for Girls, right?
I volunteer there for a week every summer. Yeah. I don't do the instrument lessons. I like band coach, which is basically, like they're kind of doing everything, but you're just there if they need some support.
It's so good. I mean, a bunch of my favorite musicians have taught or volunteered there. And it's funny, like I've watched videos of some of the bands that have kind of come out of that. And it's crazy how quickly those like young girls adapt to like the ability to be like loud and like out of control and awesome, things that I don't think a lot of times young girls are like told they can be if they want to.
Yeah, that's what's so awesome about rock camp. And that's why I wish that there was one when you were taking guitar lessons. That seems really counterproductive.
I was told I could be a really good backup singer.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I'm enraged.
Way to go, Virginia Beach. So was there a clear moment where you thought you were like, I'm going to do this music thing? Or do you think it just kind of like evolved naturally?
I think that it did evolve naturally. I did... I did watch the career of Ani DiFranco as a
didn't we all?
Oh yes. And I thought, that's really neat that she can make a career out of this. I would really like to do that too, you know. But I don't think I thought, that is my plan. That is what I am going to do until much later.
Yeah. I always feel like musicians sort of parallel visual artists more closely than like any other type of artist, I guess, because I feel like you have this really unique goal of like taking something that's so a part of like the inside of you and putting it outside, and then you have like the sole responsibility of promoting it and putting it out there. What's it like to sort of be an artist with like, you're definitely part of this community of people who are kind of like a DIY thing, where like you're putting out your own albums, you're using like Kickstarter to fund things, you're promoting and you're touring on your own. Like, what's that like to undertake something so heavily like on your own?
I think that's really interesting that you're relaying it to like visual arts, because it is kind of like you're like exhibiting yourself in like a lot of ways.
Especially your songs are like, in some ways they're very personal, and in some ways I'm sure you can apply them to like a number of other themes and meanings, but they feel so personal that it feels like it's like, this is about something that probably happened to her.
Hold on, this feels I think that part of it has never been hard for me, honestly. The part where it's like, oh, this is a lot of personal stuff and I really have to like put this on display, like that part has never really been hard for me or felt hard. But the other aspects of being DIY, which is just like the time management and the discipline and sort of like the entrepreneurial stuff, I guess you could consider it, that stuff has been very hard for me.
Yeah, well, talk a little bit about what that entails. I think people who listen to this show typically understand what it's like to promote like a show of paintings or a product line or something like that. But what's involved in promoting or producing and then promoting an album, like one single album?
Just one album.
Yeah.
It's so different. Like, I'm sure like in the DIY, in the design world, I'm sure like everybody has a different way of doing it too. But so there are a lot of different ways you can approach it. But I guess for me, the first thing you'd have to do is like fund the actual, album costs. So I guess in times past, you know, I guess a record label would front those costs for you, but now people are going directly to their like fans, crowdsourcing funding, sort of like, okay, if you want a new record, then you guys pitch in, we'll all do it together sort of thing. So you secure the funding for like the recording costs, and then, you probably want to, perform like a string of dates to go along with it to help promote the record. And then if you don't have a booking agent, you have to do that yourself, which is a lot of, you know, sending out 20 emails and getting two back and, you know, and then I guess, what else would you want to do? Well, you have to write the album. You have to, you know, have somebody manufacture the actual physical albums. And you have to, promote it to, you don't have to, but you want
it helps to promote things.
Promote it, yeah, to radio and to press. So I guess a lot of, but you know, there are, at a certain point, you know, being a DIY artist, you do have to outsource some of these things. You can't literally do everything yourself, or you're not going to do any of it well. So I guess part of it is knowing, like, you know, okay, so if I have this little bit of money, like, and I'm going to pay somebody to do something, like, where would that best be spent? And what can I actually physically, like, sit down and accomplish myself? Sort of. I don't know. I was listening to your Push the Bar episode, and I think it's going to make the difference. You know?
Okay. I'm glad you're following those things now. I feel like you've used social media so well to your advantage, and there are a lot of artists sort of in your like age bracket, I think, like Alison Weiss is doing it so well, and I'm constantly amazed at people who have been able to like harness those tools. Talk about how those tools are helpful to you, and then I want to know how you like decide what you're going to share in social media and what you're not going to share.
That's an interesting question. Alison Weiss is like,
she's a YouTube genius.
She's, you know, I've never even watched her YouTube, but I just admire her Twitter. She's great at Twitter. She's one of my, I don't think I've even told her this, but she's definitely one of my, like, you know, like my Twitter models who I'm like, she's doing it right. You know, I'm going to be more like her in my tweets. But social media, I mean, it's obvious. It kind of goes without saying, but I just feel like it's never been easier to connect with a group of people who want to hear, or see what you're doing. And so with Twitter specifically, that is probably the best thing and worst thing for me, because I'm very impulsive. So it's really easy to just like immediately like connect with, like, I don't even have that many followers. I have like maybe like 2,000 followers. So it's like really easy for me to immediately be like, I'm feeling a feeling. Hey, everyone. Here it is. And I think I don't really consciously think of, sometimes I'll be like, is this too personal? Is this too personal to tweet? Like, there was there was one point where, like, I don't know, I tweet about my shrink a lot, and I don't know.
I saw that the other day. But it's such a New York thing to do. I was like, if people are in New York, this is like not a thing. But like, I think people, I'm from the South, and people are like, I can't believe you talk about that publicly. And I'm like, it's New York. Everybody has one. It's all right.
Yeah, apparently it shuts down for 2 weeks in August. That's what my shrink told me.
July for me.
Oh, really? Okay.
It was a big deal.
Well, I'm
always fascinated. Like, you, so you just started this thing that's like a teenage angst Thursday thing where you're sharing old. Like, I live in constant fear of like anything I ever wrote down, like in a journal when I was like 15, like getting the light of day. Like, how did you decide to share something so personal like that?
I think I live in that fear too, except when I was 14, I had access to the internet, so it's all out there. So I don't live in a constant fear, but I do live in a fear that somebody's going to find it. So I just thought, well, I'll just unearth this myself.
Yeah.
No, but that's not why. I did it because I thought it was funny, though.
Yeah. I feel like I want to talk about Kickstarter a little bit.
Cool.
Because I feel like I'm an unofficial Kickstarter hype man, because I think they're incredible. They've launched all my favorite projects, and they're building their office right behind my office. So from the view of our hallway bathrooms, I can see the rooftop garden they're building. And it's like this sad contrast of high and low, where I'm in this like terrible artist bathroom that's like covered in like paint, and then we're seeing this like incredible roof garden be built. But I think they're an incredible, incredible company. You funded two albums on Kickstarter, right?
Yeah, sort of. The first one was just like, you know, like pressing the actual CDs. But the second one was just like the whole album.
Yeah. Talk about the reaction you've gotten in Kickstarter and like how that's influenced your fan base at all. Like, do you think you find new fans through Kickstarter, or do you think it's like your existing fan base that...
You know, I think I think that there is like a community of people who are sort of just the Kickstarter community. Yeah. And they check out new projects, and even when you're making a Kickstarter will give you some suggestions for how to get their community involved.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, I think those kinds of things, it's just like a tool to drive your fan base towards it. It's like makes it easier and makes it so that people who want to sort of support you, they have like a means by which to do it. And I think Kickstarter is like my favorite of all the crowdsourcing platforms. I think, you know,
it's really good.
Yeah, it is.
I
right
know people feel really torn between that and like Indiegogo or whatever. Mm-hmm. Because if it's the indie one, you can like keep whatever happens even if you don't make the total. But
yeah,
I feel like Kickstarter, sort of in comparison to my community, it's like Etsy, where it's like there might be better platforms, but there's not a better audience of people who are already there kind of like looking for interesting things to fund. And I think it's good to be in front of a community of people who are already like in the mindset of like, how can I support something creative and interesting?
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. And people, I don't know. I'm kind of like skewed in my own community, but I feel like people kind of know what Kickstarter is at this point.
Yeah. I think it's definitely reached that level of like, you can just say Kickstarter and people know what it means.
Right. And that's helpful. That's really helpful. Like, you're just like, you don't have to explain I'm doing this, you know, crowdfunded album and it's all or nothing funding and yada, yada, yada. You could just say like, I'm doing a Kickstarter, and that sort of conveys what you're saying like in a single second.
Yeah. I love that you and Simon, who you perform with, offered up a prize of Mal and Simon will spoon you for the duration of one romantic comedy film for anybody who donated over $2,000. What was the weirdest or most interesting Kickstarter reward that you had to actually fulfill?
Oh, that's a really good one. Nobody took us up on that one, oddly. I think we set it too high. I think somebody would have if it was a bit lower. Wow, I can't remember from that one, because that was like, that one was my, that the first one I did. I think I was still in college. I don't remember. I'm sure I did something weird with that one. For this most recent one, gosh, what was weird about it? I don't think I put anything weird on there. Oh, I did put a reward on there that was basically like, I'll come throw a house show. I'll throw a house party for you and make you waffles. And somebody did take me up on it, but then they lived in Indiana, and so they you know, we couldn't do it here. And then I was touring through Indiana, and I was like, I'm touring through Indiana. Do you want me to make you waffles and do the whole thing? And they were kind of like, I don't really have a space for it, so.
What a fail. I'd have been like, yes, I have 5 different types of waffles I would like made for me.
Yes. Do you have gluten-free options?
So let's talk about your albums. You've produced 4 and an EP, and the latest, Tempest in a Teacup, which is my personal favorite, just came out this spring. I was reading a bunch of interviews with you before this, and you were saying that one kind of like took a little bit longer, and you just decided at a point, like, I'm just going to go ahead and put it out. I know what that feeling feels like so much. What was that process like with the latest album?
I think I'm curious as to what you're referring to when you say, you know what that feels
like. I wrote a book.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm done. Yeah. I don't want to look at this anymore. I don't know what's happening in this middle section. I'm just going to close it and turn it in.
Close the book on it.
I mean, I liked it. I wrote it. It came from me. So it could, I mean, I was like, all right, it's at least going to be honest and what I like, but at a certain point I was like, I can't, like,
you get too
close
to it, yeah. And you're just like, yeah, I think it's the same with music, like, almost exactly, especially if it's an album of your own material, especially if you're a solo artist, it just gets, you get too close to it, and it's too much of you, and you're just like, I can't even think about this critically anymore. But so what happened with the new record is, it was actually 15 or 16 songs, and it was kind of like, It wasn't a mess. It was just like a lot of different, it wasn't a collection of songs that felt cohesive and intentional. It just felt like I kind of threw up on a record, you know? And then I talked to somebody who was like, you know, at this point, and they gave me like biz advice. You know? They're like, at this point in your career, like, hopefully you're going to have a long career, and like everything you were putting out should be like very intentional. You don't have to put anything out. You should just only put something out if you want to and if you feel good about it, because there's no pressure. You're not on a label. Why do you have to if you don't love it? And I was like, yeah, that's a really good
advice.
Yeah.
That's really good advice. I don't think I've ever heard anybody tell me that, or like anybody I know, but that's really wonderful advice. I feel like no matter what sort of creative field you're in, there's always somebody kind of standing over you that's like, it's been 2 years, like, where's the next thing that's coming out? But you really should wait until then.
And sometimes I think it's like internal pressure from yourself, but yeah. I mean it's real in the sense that you should like you should feel your feelings, but it's also it's not real. It's like, you know, that's just a pressure that you're putting on yourself that you don't have to.
Yeah. So I've listened to all of your albums except for the very first one, the Malblum album.
Ooh.
I really like your
Vegan
t-shirt
on
the
so
front of that album.
Bad,
and I'm kind of, honestly, like, I'm really blown away by, like, how sophisticated your songwriting has gotten in, like, a relatively short amount of time for a musician. And between the last two albums, it feels like the stories that you're telling are, they're really, like, much more layered and deep, and they're, like, very sincere. And, like, I typically, and this is terrible to say, I hate earnestness in music. I don't know. I want to be like, stop taking yourself so seriously. But for some reason, it doesn't bother me with you, and I love it. And it feels like I'm somebody who only likes really, like, happy, upbeat, like, fast music. But I listen to your album and, like, kind of sit on the couch and, like, close my eyes, and it makes me so happy because the stories you're telling are so beautiful and so simple in a way. But I feel like there was, like, a big change between the last album and this one just feels so beautiful and simple. Did you feel a change in your songwriting, or is it something that just kind of like grows with you and you don't really notice that?
Wow, that's that's a really like beautiful summary of my whole like career. But do you feel it? I think that for me personally, I'm conscious of it changing. I think my whole career, as it were, has been
take the air quotes off. Career.
I think it's all the entire thing, honestly, can be summed up in, you know, me not being afraid to not be funny, or like sort of cover up my sadness with humor, because that's like,
you do a lot of that, and it's really funny though.
It's my shtick, you know.
That's okay. I want to read that line then. For those of you who haven't heard the album yet, there's a song called Valentine's Day, which like I was introduced to through the Chris Gethard show, and there's a line that you sing really quickly that says, I think I like it, but I like it because on some level I like to create emotional distractions in my life to prevent my life or prevent myself from dealing with my real issues, which to me like sums up the like your kind of shticky thing that you do that are like funny songs that still are like really honest and raw. I love that part of, I think I like that you sort of keep that in all your albums. Do you feel like that's something you'll eventually like see yourself moving out of, or do you want to like hold on to that thing that's like, I hide feelings and humor sometimes.
I don't think I'm ever going to let go of that. I mean, that's just me. That's, you know, that's just even talking to me. That's what I do in conversation. Like, I'm not going to stop doing that. But I think, you know, trying to incorporate other just straightforward, more earnest stuff and incorporate other characters or perhaps things that aren't based on my own life in my writing has been good for it, for sure. Like that song with Samson and Washington State that we were talking about before, that was like based, I mean, it was based on myself and my life and my feelings, but it was also like based on like the biblical story, obviously, so that, I don't know. I think it's healthy. It's good to have other things that inspire you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're going to hear that song in just a second. Before we take a break, I want to ask you two last questions. What's the very best part of what you do?
Whoa. For me, personally, the best part and the reason that I do it is just connecting with people and sort of the thing that intention behind like what I'm doing and why I'm doing what I'm doing and what I tell myself like on days where I'm like, oh, everyone else is doing this so much better and faster than I'm doing it is just like, I'm trying to do something where, I connect with other people that feel the way that I feel. And if that's like a small group of people or a large group of people, that's at the end of the day, that's like the best part and the reason sort of.
Yeah. And what do you think, Mal from 5 years from now, what advice would you give to Mal now? If you could like look back.
Oh my God. I was just thinking about this before I came in. That's so crazy. That is so crazy. I was literally thinking about this in terms of like 5 years and I was thinking like, you know, 5 years ago, literally if you told the me of 5 years ago that I would be like making most of my living, as a musician in New York City, I would like be ecstatic. I would be so I wouldn't really believe you. And also if you told me that, you know, I'd be like doing some of the stuff that I'm doing, I would be like, I would just be so pleased. I would be really just touched. But, the question I think is like, now that I'm thinking about it, I'm thinking about like, okay, but like, how do you make it, sustainable for the you in 5 years from now or for the next 5 years or even 10 years, you know? And I think that's a really interesting question. But it's really helpful to think about, you know, sort of that person from the past and like what they would think about what I'm doing now, which yeah. they would think was really fucking cool. I think. I was 20. And I think, you know, if I had been like, hey, 20-year-old Mal, guess what you're going to be doing in 5 years? I'd be like, oh, boy.
Good. It's good to stop and remember like what you've done and how much you've accomplished so that you won't use air quotes on the word career.
Oh yeah,
because you've got one.
Oh thanks,
you're doing real well.
No, so, you do. No, you do.
We're gonna take a quick break, and when we come back, Mal is gonna play a song from her latest album, Tempest in a Teacup.
Blueprint is the original juice cleanse program to offer different levels of intensity depending on your needs and current diet. Designed to purify and detoxify, Blueprint Cleanse is made from the freshest 100% raw and USDA certified organic ingredients, cold pressed to retain nutrients and flavor. Blueprint also offers a line of organic juices, cold pressed and raw, in a variety of fruit and vegetable combinations and available in individual bottles. Blueprint Cleanse is available at Whole Foods Market and many other retailers across the U.S. To learn more about their line of organic cleanses, juices, and other products, visit them today at blueprint.com or call them at 866-774-6831. That's 866-774-6831. Work hard, play hard. Cleanse, repeat.
It's been 2¼ weeks since the week I was first gone. It's not that long. It's not that long. And when I get to you, make everything alright. Don't wanna have to fight to hold you late at night, but I just might. I just might. And now the voices in my head are loud. I've said too much, can't face this crowd. I cannot put the words back in my mouth. And how I hoped that you would understand when it comes from you. It's twice as bad. You're the worst I ever had. Got the worst I ever had out of me. Out of me. Out of me. Nothing to eat. Back to you, and if I do, if I do, we can fashion a rope from all of my regrets. How I saw you in every person that I met, all let you tie me to the bed, to the bed. 'Cause I'm not as strong as I am scared. I'll sit for you in the wooden chair. You don't have to hold me down. I'll help you cut my hair myself. Still would. just one fear. I don't wanna die with no one knowing I was here, and I still hear that in my ears. I still hear that in my ears. So Massachusetts and then New York, it's gonna take a little work to get back to the place I was before. $5,773 finally out of the eater. You got something you could eat, and was it me?
Awesome. Thanks so much for playing that. Thanks everybody for listening. You can check out Mal at malblum.bandcamp.com or on Twitter, Twitter/Mal Blum. And also check out her super awesome new zombie video. It's for the song Zombies, comma, the bodies, exclamation point. Go check it out. It's hilarious. It's very funny. Thanks for being here, Mal.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.